Kitty cat. Has your cat clawed anything new made of metal?
Oh, the other one woke me up this morning going through my wife's jewelry.
Hey, needed some money for some treats, I guess.
Yesterday, I found an earring in the hallway.
Uh-oh.
So, yeah, it's a little trophy to carry around.
Yeah, I have conquered these humans.
I'm pawing your baubles.
Do you have a lock on it?
No, they're just laid out in they're not really secure.
Oh.
They're not in a box or anything.
Yeah, you'll find them when you move. So they haven't clawed anything metal, but now they're stealing jewelry. Huh.
They're still clawing the same vent over the stove.
They got a hate on for that vent.
Well, it's there.
Oh, kitty cats.
I'm Nate Burgess.
And I'm Phil DeLuca.
And we are Commanderin.
Commanderin.
Thanks for listening. We put a spotlight on community issues, but never ever talk about four banned topics.
Four.
Religion, politics, Hearthstone, and hip-hop.
Oh.
We want to remind everyone to visit patreon.com/commanderinmtg, blah, 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 blah. Don't forget to visit us on YouTube. Hunter Pruitt and Bradford Heron, they're cool guys. They make videos. Thanks. This week, we have a wonderful show lined up for you.
We sure do.
So, Sean Watson, he's in Texas right now.
Yeehaw!
And we actually recorded this material before, but then my computer decided not to save it. So, Sean decided that we should have an episode that's all about the noobs. And
noobs.
If you're a noob, it's okay. It just means you haven't learned everything yet. It's
yeah.
not. There's no shame in being a noob. It's just
yeah.
the start of the process.
They're on an awesome path when it comes down to it.
Mm-hmm.
Like they're about to learn all of these really neat things for the very first time.
How to get crushed.
Yes.
In so many ways. So Sean was thinking that we should have an episode that explains what we would have liked to have known when we ourselves were starting our Commanderin careers.
Mm-hmm.
So that's what this is, this episode right here.
Yeah, it's a pretty good episode. It's a long time in coming, too.
Mm-hmm.
We do hear from a lot of new players, and in fact, some of our patrons are relative new players, too, like Henry Stukenborg, who I believe is entertaining Sean at this moment in Texas.
Wow.
Yeah, I think they're both at a rodeo together, eating
what?
Barbecue.
Oh. He also does the copy editing on the EDH Rec articles.
Oh, how about
so
that?
He makes sure that my sentences have enough commas in them and that I don't capitalize card keywords so much.
Good on ya, Henry. So, mm-hmm. How does he feel about the Oxford comma?
Oh, Oxford commas. Generally accepted. It's everybody likes it.
Especially those truckers in Maine, I think it is.
What?
Yeah, I guess we can cover it now. It's not quite the news. Some truckers in Maine, because of the Oxford comma, were awarded years' worth of overtime because of because of the lack of an Oxford comma.
Oh, some legal contract stuff needed a comma?
Yeah.
Didn't have one?
Yep.
So they got extra stuff?
Yep. I think it was Maine. Maine is one of the United States for our Philippine listeners.
Mm-hmm.
No, those guys are nuts, really. They really are kind of crazy.
They got lobsters.
Oh, yeah.
And a crazy governor.
Wait, the Filipinos?
No.
Or the Mainers?
Maine.
Yeah. Although the Filipinos have a crazy president.
Eh, There's lots of crazy presidents. Anyway, how about some news? So we all record about a week in advance for these episodes. And right now we're looking at some Amonkhet invocations here.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we are.
And they changed the graphic design and the font a little bit, slightly there. And I'm going to... We'll find out by the time this episode ships, probably. But I think there's an April Fool's coming up.
I certainly hope so, Nate. I certainly hope so. We'll have to put a picture of one of these in our show notes, because of course this has to be fake. They're using hieroglyphics and a center justified. Okay, they're using a center justified font that's in Egyptian hieroglyphic style for the name of the cards, and then filling in the rest of the namespace with hieroglyphics.
Yeah.
So it's incredibly hard to read these things.
Yep.
It's like the card art is on a pedestal or something in a museum, or we're looking out of a window.
Mm.
And so the borders are super thick and they look like sandstone. The rules text itself is written sort of in a bolder hieroglyphic font without the filler, thankfully. I guess.
Yeah, it's all caps.
No, this is just too busy.
The rules text is all caps.
Yeah.
In a different font.
I don't know. What do you think?
I think it's a joke from Wizards.
Did you see that video of Trick Jarrett, though? He was kind of turning that, what was it, a Force of Will or whatever it was?
No.
So what they've done is they made the sandstone borders kind of matte with a few of the highlights in foil. The colors that are painted on the side, on the columns of the sand, of the border are not foil. But the little bolus horns are, and then the art itself is foil, which is kind of the opposite of the way the Kaladesh inventions were treated.
Mm.
They were treated with a super foily outside, but then the art wasn't foil. And the first time I saw one, I was like, wait, did I just get a fake? But no. So, I don't know. Maybe it's real. Mark Rosewater asked for feedback.
No, sir, I don't like it.
That was more than half the response, but a surprising number of people were like, what? It's perfectly readable. Can't you read it? And like,
nope.
This is great. I know. Like, charitably, Days looks like, what is it? Tibazian. Tibazain, like a protein or something.
Yeah, there's a bunch of extra stuff there. Anyway, so Sean's trying to get to Vegas. And he's set up a GoFundMe page.
He sure has.
So if you want to stop hearing him beg for stuff temporarily, he'll start again sometime. But
yeah, but right now he's begging to be sent to Vegas by you folks. A whole bunch of other generous people are actually paying for his, like, have chipped in so far, just not enough yet to get him to Vegas. So we're hoping that a couple of more listeners will chip in so that we can get Sean to Vegas. We can do fun things. Nate, Do you realize we have never met Sean face to face before?
Only virtually.
That's right. But we have never seen actual sunlight bounce off of his freckled cheeks.
He has freckles?
I'm making that up.
Hmm.
Sure. Let's say he has freckles. You get them when you're hunting gremlins.
Hmm.
GoFundMe. We'll provide a link to Sean's. And, Nate, you have successfully gotten me to pick a winner. I do appreciate it. We're going to give away prizes at GP Las Vegas, including a full sealed set of signed Commander 2016 decks. And for now, we're going to give away one per show leading up to Vegas, and probably a few extra. But the winner this week will win a signed by Ethan Fleischer and Ben Hayes Kynaeus and Tiro deck. That's the Stalwart Unity deck. Yeah. And the winner is... Oh, you'll have to tune in to the end of the show. Oh.
Mm.
Oof, medicine. Good.
All right, minor topic. What have we been playing or playtesting? I have been playing Mass Effect Andromeda. And if Sean, we'll give Sean a chance to play it, and maybe we can get a whole episode out of talking about it.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. But I think it's better than Mass Effect 3.
Really?
Yeah. It's not as good as Mass Effect 2, but it's better than 3.
Huh.
And I'm getting into the multiplayer. I haven't decided whether that's better than Mass Effect 3 yet.
Multiplayer is a survival game, right?
It's got a few rounds, and every third round there's some special objectives to do, and it's cooperative. You got four players, and they're all making friends with their weapons and force powers.
Excellent. Are there multiple versions of multiplayer on that, or is it just the horde mode?
It's all just the horde mode. There's no team capture the flag or anything. It's all cooperative, four people against the bad guys.
Yeah, I've been playing a lot of survival games recently, and I had hopes that Andromeda actually had a survival game element to it.
Yeah, it has a specific number of rounds. You don't keep going until you're all dead. So it does end. There is an extraction round where after you've done all the stuff, then you have to fight people off and then get to the ship so you can go home.
Yay, home.
And get your credits and spend the credits to get better weapons.
To go back for more.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, not nearly as spectacularly. I finally updated the mimeoplasm. There weren't a lot of changes to make from recent sets, but it was, like, I have changed the way I think about some things, so I made some alterations. And the newest version is up on DeckStats. Somebody, Jesse, I think, on Twitter was like, hey, you have a mimeoplasm deck, mate. Can you show it to me? And I looked, and I'm like, yeah, that was my Australian accent. That's about all you're getting tonight. And I looked, and I'm like, oh, it's 1.7 years old. Oh, God. And I looked through the list, and I'm like, well, maybe this will be good. I'll just send him the list. Profit accrue fix. No. So I'm going through and I'm updating to the as played versions. And of course, trying to update Mimeoplasm, looking at that and trying to correlate that, I was looking at a bunch of cards and I'm like, oh God, why am I playing this card?
I should be playing Infect.
No, I'm still not going to do that. Although we're getting a lot of minus one counters this set.
And bricks.
And bricks, yeah. And embalming things.
White zombies.
Oh, are there?
Yeah, the zombies are white.
White colored, or actually like color wheel white?
Color wheel white.
What's doing that? I missed
the embalm ability.
Oh, is that what embalm does? Look at me.
Mm.
I thought it was that card that turns sideways, no?
No, the embalm ability is on some
creatures. I
haven't
had time to look at the rules since Monday.
Ah.
Oh.
Ah.
Exile this card from your graveyard. Create a token that's a copy of it, except it's a white zombie human warrior with no mana cost.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, my. White zombie.
Yeah. Get your Rob Zombie albums going in the background.
You know, I hate to say it, Blake, but this was the perfect opportunity to give us a preview card. Because Nate would have pulled out some white zombie. And, well, there you go. Divertini? Divertinit. But no, bivertinit?
What are you doing?
Oh, sorry, I saw a invocation.
Oh, you're reading the hieroglyphic word again?
Bivertinit. Tinit, and it is an Urstart. Urstart. All right. Sorry. That's enough sarcasm.
No, it's not.
Hey, we were told we had to up our sarcasm game.
Oh. By who? What?
Yeah, somebody posted and said they missed the sarcasm of Sean back when Sean was not on the show for a few episodes. And and like this episode, but right now he's eating Texas barbecue, so really. And yeah, they said we had to up our sarcasm. So let's get more sarcastic, Nate.
Sure, that'll be a great idea.
Yeah, it's a wonderful idea. Where are we going to talk about newbies?
Yeah, so our main topic. How do we get into the format? So I think we all recommend here that the cheapest way and the most comprehensive way is just get a pre-con. They're $35, maybe they're $20 if you can find them. Just look at the commanders. See one you like, get the deck.
And when you say pre-con, because now we have to assume that our loyal listeners have passed this episode on to their new player friends. So what is a pre-con?
It is a magic set that is named Commander and then a year. So like Commander 2016 is a pre-con. And there's going to be five of them in different colors. And they go back a few years. So
yeah,
the older ones can be more expensive. They're harder to find. And some of them are more valuable that way. But the recent ones, they've been printed a lot. And you can find them.
There are some that are a little bit more expensive than others if you try to get them individually online. But if you go to some place like in America, a Walmart or Target, you can sometimes stumble on, well, a treasure trove. And just pick one up that you haven't picked up before. It's like retails at $35. Have fun because you can play them right out of the box.
Yeah, and if you want to tune it, it's going to give you about half the cards you need, or maybe it'll give you a third of the cards that you need for three different decks.
Yeah, they're really good investments to pick them up. So let's say you don't have access to one of these, but you do have a pile of Magic cards. What could you do?
Well, then you probably go to EDH Rec and look at the cards that you have and see how often they're played. And if they're played a lot, then they're probably good in this format.
And so EDH Rec, that's the first of the tools we would recommend, right? EDHrec.com?
Yeah. There's some good articles there, too.
Yeah, some really good ones about the partner commanders, especially.
Mm-hmm.
Right, so one of the things that I did for, I've got a sort of a colony of new EDH players at work. And what I suggested to them, because they had some Magic cards already, was just pick your two favorite colors, pick your favorite cards from those two favorite colors, and just put them into a deck and make sure that you have somewhere about 38 lands or so for those two colors. Pick any legendary creature that has those two colors and, you know, obviously follow all the building rules and just go from there. Just make something that's kind of fun to play, uses cards that you enjoy. Maybe you understand how they work. That's great. After that, you'll want to pick up the pieces and tune it a little bit better.
And if you're playing with other noobs, you won't get crushed so much.
Yeah, you'll get crushed about about evenly with all the rest. And if you are an experienced player with a bunch of new players, then definitely make sure that you've got a deck that they can play against. Using one of the pre-constructed decks is fine for that, especially if they've been building, you know, their own. And your object, like Mark Rosewater said in one of his recent podcasts where he talked about teaching Magic, is to teach them how to play and make sure they have fun, not win. You're not there to beat them up. Like I did with an older version of the Mimeoplasm. Yeah, Nate may have had a different experience, and I did too. But you're not really there to beat them up. I did this with the Mimeoplasm. I played it, and I just said, well, you guys just have to beat me. And they were using pre-constructed Commander 2016 decks, and they're fierce right out of the box. And they took me down. They beat me. Because, of course, the Mimeoplasm can really not handle sustained attack from a bunch of... my deck at least can't handle sustained attacks like that.
Oh.
Yeah, well, you know, I know the curve well enough. They got me to 24 life, and I was like, well, unless this next card is a miracle, unless it is the card I need to get out of this mess, they're just going to kill me.
Hmm.
They took me down. Good for them. That was fun.
And if you are more interested in winning, we have a regular segment called the Watch List on this show. And on Deck Stats, we keep a list of all the cards that we've had on the watch list. So you might want to peruse those.
Yeah. Our current recommendations are, of course, our preview card, Deadeye Navigator, mm-hmm. and Paradox Engine. Just drop Paradox Engine in whatever you're playing. It's okay. Mm.
Then stuff will happen.
Stuff just can't help but happen, Nate. That is a nutsy card. Oh, my goodness.
It's a what?
Nutsy card. It's sort of like Bigly, but nuts. It's a nuts card.
Okay. Thought you said something else. Okay, moving on. So we, Phil, myself, and Sean. Sean had some tips, too. We've compiled a list of, let's see, we got 16 different tips that we're going to talk about. So let's get into them.
Yeah.
First, our first section, we're going to have two sections. First is deck building. And then the second section will be about actually playing the game.
Hmm.
So the first tip one. Mana curve. So just because this is Commander doesn't mean that you can just ignore all the cards that are under 5 converted mana cost. Unless you're playing Narset or Yuleva or another mana cheater, then you sort of can.
Yeah, but we don't recommend that for your first deck.
Yeah, well. My early wins in my career were because people ignored me for several turns because nobody saw my board state as threatening, because it wasn't threatening, because I had a lot of big mana cost cards, and I couldn't cast them, and my hand was full of them, and I was sitting there just looking for land. And they beat each other up, because I was just flopping there like a fish, and I slowly played more lands until I had enough mana to cast stuff. So the first deck I built, it's similar to what Adam said in our a couple episodes ago. The first deck I built was Kozilek, Butcher of Truth, because... When I'm getting back into Magic, I don't know what all the cards are, so I decided to go one color at a time, and I started with all the colorless stuff, because that can go into all the decks. And so I built a Kozilek deck, and it didn't do so well.
Yep.
And then I added blue and did a Memnarch deck. And just branching out from colorless to artifact blue, and that did a bit better. And just go from there.
Yeah, you did it very methodically. And then you ended one of the first games I think you and I played. You had already done a whole bunch of experimenting. And it was a Reaper King deck, a 5-color Reaper King deck.
Yeah.
That was nasty.
Yeah, it is.
Yeah.
It's got a couple specific tricks in there.
But this tip about mana curve is spot on. You don't want to get stuck holding a bunch of cards that you can't cast. While at the very least, because then you're watching other people have fun playing. I try to keep my mana curve so that the average cost of the cards, and that's really what we're talking about here if you're a brand new Magic player, the average cost of my spells is somewhere between 3 and 4. And that way I can cast it usually by turn 3, because you should be keeping a hand that has like 3 lands in it. So yeah, mana curve, keep it low. Not as low as you have to in other formats, but keep it low.
Yeah, and when you're going for the low CMC cards, look for efficiency. And we'll talk a little bit more about that in tip 6 later. But
that's a preview.
Yeah, moving on. Tip 2.
Hmm.
Add enough lands.
Hmm.
Now, it might be tempting to take out a land or 2 or 3 or 5.
I've been tempted.
Because you see all these awesome bombs and you want to put them in your deck. But if you do that, your board state's going to stagnate and you're going to sit there being frustrated. So, my personal formula. Take the number 30. Now, look at your commander. How many colors does your commander have?
Mine has 3.
Okay, add that to 30. How much?
33.
Okay, now what's the mana cost of your commander? The total CMC?
3.
Okay, add that. So add them all up.
34, 35, 36.
Okay, that's how many lands you should start with. Maybe you want to go higher, maybe not. But that formula's worked for me.
Hmm. I was using Marath there. Marath Will of the Wild has 3 colors, costs 3 to start, but then gets more expensive over time. So I should probably put a few more lands in than that.
Okay. Go ahead. Do it. So if your meta still uses partial Paris Mulligan, which is a, it's a historical thing, maybe you don't know about it. But if they do that, then you can go a bit lower with your lands, as long as when you have your opening hand, you aggressively mull so that you have enough lands to do stuff.
And aggressively mull, that's our slang for mulliganing.
Yeah, that's where you take the cards that you're not going to cast soon and you throw them back in your deck and draw something else for your opening hand. So if the first deck that you brew is a low CMC commander,
yeah,
and then the next deck that you brew is a high CMC commander and you're using the same number of lands, then the first few games with your new deck aren't going to go so well for you.
That's true.
So, for example, in a Damia Landfall deck, your commander's 7 converted mana cost.
Oof.
And it's a deck built on landfall, so you need to get lands on the board to do its tricks. 36 lands is not enough. It's not enough for that. Got to have more.
It's true. So by your formula, Damia has 3 colors, so that's 33. She's a 7 CMC commander, so that's 40 lands.
Mm-hmm.
Oof.
Yep. That sounds about right.
Yeah, it does. It's not like you're not drawing cards with Damia either, so you're going to get to the bombs.
Oh, yeah, you are.
Mm-hmm.
So, tip 3. Ease into tutors. Now, you might be listening to a lot of podcasts about Commander and talking to people, and they say, tutors are great. You have a deck of 100 cards, and you only have one of each card, so how do you get the specific card that you want? You need tutors. But if you're just starting out, you don't really know what your deck does. You don't really know what all these cards do. And you don't know what card to play in a certain situation. You might think you do, but then you'll find out that you don't. And then if you have a lot of tutors in your deck, that's going to be frustrating to everyone, including yourself. It's going to frustrate you because you're not going to really know what to search for. And what you do find is may not be effective as you thought it would be. And it's going to frustrate everyone else, because they're all sitting there looking at you, waiting for you to find the card that you need.
Oh,
and you're
going
to take 2 or 3 minutes to find it. And all that time pressure as they wait for you is going to lead to more frustration, and you're going to make bad choices. And you'll be disappointed.
So true. Just last night, one of the new guys in my group at work, he had to tutor a couple of times, and he's running, of course, a Gonti deck, and went with a couple of the black tutors, and it's like he just spent a long time trying to figure out what card to get. And he was transmuting, too, so it was a little, it should have been easier, but it took a lot longer.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Figure out how your deck works, get to know it really well, and then tutor for those things if you're going to use tutors at all.
Mm-hmm.
Tip 4, ramp. Every color has it. So before we get into ramp, let's talk about a related concept called fixing versus ramp. Ramp gets you ahead of the mana curve, usually by next turn giving you 2 or 3 more mana available. A Soul Ring is a great example of mana ramp, because if you cast it on turn 1, when you start turn 2, you actually have 3 mana available already. And then you play a land, and now you've got 4 mana available, and everything is fantastic if you've gotten that draw. So that's kind of ramp. And there are some cards that fix as well, which means that they provide you with the color that you need in order to play your commander effectively, or half of your deck, or a third of your deck, or whatever the color breakdown is. And sometimes, in the case of something like a Darksteel Ingot or Commander's Sphere, that is both ramp and fixing. You need ramp in order to be able to cast the really big spells and the multiple activated abilities going off that we love in Commander. And, of course, you want to cast them when they're meaningful, but still, you got to have that mana available. And the sooner you have that mana available, the sooner you can start casting those spells meaningfully. So the color that's the king at ramp is green, because it has a lot of go-fetch basic lands and enchant this land to generate more mana and so forth effects. black is probably second best because black has some fantastic ways to generate mana with rituals, although we don't recommend those, but those generate extra mana for one mana in. And they also have the ability to get more out of their swamps. Red has rituals too, and then blue has some really cheap combos like with Palancron and Great Whale and High Tide and Deadeye Navigator, Grand Architect and Pilipala and so forth that can generate infinite amounts of mana. And then, you know, there's white, poor white. White has very little in the way of inexpensive, easily accessible mana ramp. A recent one is Knight of the White Orchid that at least goes to fetch a planes for you.
Yeah. And a technical note, while we just said don't use so much tutors, the things in green that ramp you are generally tutoring for a basic land.
Right.
And we don't really count those as tutors.
Yeah, because you're getting a basic land, and it's not often, I mean, Damia Landfall accepted that a basic land can win you the game, right? Maybe a few
or
others.
Or 19 like, of them at a time.
Yeah, or 19, let's say. Nate's referencing a Commander Versus video in which his Damia deck not only was featured, but let's just say it stole the show.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was
when
wonderful.
You have 20 lands on turn 5, things are going to happen.
So it's important to remember, though, that all colors have access to artifacts called rocks that ramp your mana production. Artifacts like Worn Power Stone, of course, Soul Ring, Thought Vessel. There are creatures that generate mana, like, and those are commonly called kind of dorks, mana dorks. And those are the various Mir and then the various elves that generate green mana and so forth. Cold Steel Heart and cards like it will fix for a specific color. Astral Cornucopia, various others, including, you know, there is a whole range of 3 converted mana cost rocks that provide you with any color mana and usually have some other benefit to them. And then, of course, there are the perennials and super expensive cards like Mana Vault and Mana Crypt. Those are, again, really expensive. They give you colorless mana, but price, and sometimes in dollars. The Signets are also great. Those are kind of like having an extra land drop because you probably can't use them if you do them on turn 2. I know you don't like them, but they're good for fixing. And they get you one turn ahead in terms of mana production. I know, not so great. There are a series of medallions that also reduce costs, as well as Seal of the Guild Pact and Urza's Filter. So that's a way to reduce your mana costs overall and get more out of the mana that you do spend. And then, of course, there are the Khans of Tarkir block had a bunch of mana rocks that the dragons can serve as creatures, but the Khans rocks, what are they called?
The banners?
The banners from the Khan series, you can actually sack them to draw a card, too. So,
eh.
Yeah, I know. They're not great. But again, if you're just starting out, just throw them in and see how they work for you. And then understand what it is you're looking for out of your rocks.
Yeah, if you're using a monocolored deck, then you're probably going to want a medallion in there.
Yeah.
And a note on blue, I tend to use Blatant Thievery or Expropriate to steal lands from every player. And that way...
Oh, you're a bad man.
That way I'm 4 lands ahead of everybody. And it's tough to get them back.
It really is tough to get those back. Those are good choices. Sometimes there's a tasty creature and I've seen you take a land and I'm like, oh, that sucks.
Gimme.
Especially when it's my land.
It's everybody's land.
Yeah, but I'm...
This land is your land. Mm. This land was your land, but now it's my land.
Oh, Nate. So devious. Mm. Tip 5. Draw in the cards. You want to restock your hand whenever you can. Damia, as we mentioned before, oh, such a good commander for that, because every turn you just get 7. You have 7 cards in your hand. And if you've done it right, you've drawn 7 cards that turn.
Mm-hmm.
Blue and black are king for this. They're They're just so good at card draw. I actually prefer Black's version, but it usually costs life. Green bases all of its card draw, or most of it at least, on creatures, whether it's their power, toughness, or the number of your creatures. Red has recently gotten this feature that the development team calls the impulsive draw, and that's where you exile a couple of cards off the top of your deck, and you can cast them until the end of your turn.
Yeah, I
know. You compare it to blue and black, and it's like, all right, whatever, Red. But poor Red, poor Red. And Red and Blue both have looting, which is sort of card draw, but you have to throw a card away, so it's not card advantage. And then White has... not much. Investigate. Some very small creature-based stuff, like Mentor of the Meek, and there's not a lot going for White in terms of draw. So hopefully, like with Ramp, you've paired it with something that can do it well.
Well, Red does have wheels.
That's true. Red does have wheels, where you discard your hand and then draw seven new cards or N new cards based on some other factor. So yeah, Red in a pinch can just totally refill its grip. And of course, Red being as impulsive and hasty as it is, it wants to get rid of cards and then just grab them all back. And Artifact Draw is available to everybody, but it's either symmetrical, like the Horn of Greed or Howling Mine, or it's like it's inefficiently expensive in terms of mana, like JMD Tome. And they're playing with a few things recently that kind of get around that a little bit, make it a little bit cheaper for an upfront cost, but we'll see how that turns out. Except, of course, Skullclamp, which goes in decks that feature lots of small creatures because you staple it onto a small creature and it kills that creature and you draw two cards for one mana spent and a creature sacrificed.
Oh, my token, Sapperling. Poor guy.
Or like White has, a soldier, a little 1-1 soldier with a shiny new helmet for just a moment, one painful moment.
For the symmetrical artifacts, I would caution you against using some of them because all the other players are going to draw cards before you get to draw them.
Yep.
So for that, I would recommend Temple Bell or Miko Koro, which is kind of an expensive land, because you can control when everyone draws the card, and you do it right before your turn.
Yep. You do it on your last opponent's end step so that they cannot take advantage of any slow effects they've drawn.
Mm-hmm.
But you can.
If their hand is full, maybe they'll have to discard it.
Oh, yeah. Weaponizing that Temple Bell. That's one of the ways, at least. Tip six. This was one that took me a little time to get used to. Repeatable effects. In our format, we're spending generally a lot of mana for our cards, and we want them to do something more than once. So permanents are usually better than sorceries and instants for whatever effect it is you're looking for. Like Lightning Bolt, great card, really genuinely great card, except in our format. It does one thing, it does 3 points of damage, and then it's done. You can't flash it back, you can't get it back from your graveyard in most cases. So you want a permanent effect, if you can, that you can use multiple times. It's why creatures are so important in our format. Big creatures especially, because we have so much life, we want a big hit when we get them out. And flashback and buyback, like I said, is good. And other effects that let you recover the card. The new embalm, which I messed up before. The new embalm looks good for that, because you're getting at least one more use out of your card. At least. Well, we'll see how it goes. We've seen one embalm card, too.
Yeah, I'm not a big fan of embalm. It's a flavor keyword, but yeah.
Yeah, you get a white zombie. Black sunshine. Tip seven. This kind of goes along with that multiple use philosophy. It's flexibility. So many cards have modes where it says, you know, choose one or more, and then there's a list. Now they're bulleted lists, which makes it really easy to see. But these are cards like charms and commands and so forth. These are cards with different modes or cards that allow you to apply them in different ways, sometimes tricky ways, as I've seen Nate do. and they're generally more useful in our format than cards with a single use. So again, like Lightning Bolt, big deal. But a card that does 2 damage and maybe destroys an artifact as well. I just made that up, maybe. That's pretty good. Again, because it's adaptable to a variety of situations. And as we know in Commander, Nate, our situations are crazy. Just straight up crazy. They crazy, baby. Crazy. So you want modal cards, right? Cards that are charms and commands, like I said, like Cryptic Command. That's a kind of a classic. You'll see that if you're playing anybody with blue in their deck. The Siege enchantments from Khans of Tarkir, Fate Reforged, actually. Those are great because they have 2 choices, and usually each choice is really useful if you can build your deck to take advantage of that. Kicker is kind of like a modal card where you can kick it and get some super effect if you want that. And Entwine, like Tooth and Nail, plus what was the recent one from Shadows? Escalate. I used Escalate the other night and it was fantastic. So you want to look for ways to increase the utility of your card by having them flexible. Target player effects, right? So that you can provide a benefit or like card draw or some life gain if you're going for life gain. And if it says target player on it, you can actually use it on another player. Sometimes you can weaponize that, and sometimes you're just doing it, you know, make friends. Blood Gift Demon is one of those where you can, for 1 point of damage, they can draw a card. Now, if that person has 1 point of life left, oops, enjoy the card. Blue Sun Zenith is a good way to get a Nekusar or Milkil out of it, as well as draw you a bunch of cards in a pinch. And Comparative Analysis, again, you're making friends and maybe milling a person out. And 2 or more effects, like Dust to Dust, Return to Dust, the Offering Cycle from Commander 14, the Confluence Cycle from Commander 15, even something like Rain of Thorns, right? These are just great cards because you're getting 2-fers out of them.
Decimate.
Oh, Decimate, yeah. Yeah.
Oh, here's a card, Destructive Revelry. For red and a green, it's an instant. Destroy target, artifact, or enchantment, and Destructive Revelry deals 2 damage to that permanent's controller. Oh. So you weren't completely making it up.
Oh, yeah. Look at that. Look at that. Not completely. That's a very fun card because that's just insult on top of the injury. And the real injury is destroying the enchantment or artifact. And then it's like, yeah, and 2 points, buddy. Pow!
Yeah, I'd probably use Hull Breach instead because then you'd destroy 2 things.
Ooh. Yeah, Hull Breach is good.
Or Decimate. Then you destroy 4 things.
Right.
Tip 8. If at first your deck doesn't succeed, brew and brew again.
Hey.
This is Sean's contribution. If you have a passion for a commander but you can't make it tick, don't abandon it. It will have a level or build. Keep on going. I've had no less than 7 radically different blue... Let me do this in Sean's voice. I've had no less than 7 radically different brews for Lazav, Dimir Mastermind, my passion project.
Mm-hmm.
Eh?
Indeed, he is quite passionate for Lazav.
Tip 9. Keep a record of your decks digitally to review your brewing progress.
This was a good one.
That has allowed me to constantly review my thinking and versions and effectively chart my progress. So there's websites like Tapped Out or Deck Stats, or there's a Deck Builder app that Sean was talking about that he likes a lot.
Yep, I did that as well, which is why I know my Mimeoplasm is up to Mark 12 point A. And the A was because I removed Crufix and put in Giant Ataphage because Sean Main beat me about the head and neck with it. So, yeah, that was good stuff.
Let's get some more Giant Ataphages on the board.
Yeah, let's do it because it's going to happen anyway. Yeah, that's very good advice. Keep track of it and see how you brew over time, and then like I did with the mimeoplasm, realize, wow, I'm so bad at this back 1.7 years ago.
In version 2.3
of
the mimeoplasm. Anyway, enough with the deck building tips. How about actually playing the game?
Tip 10, politics. Making friends and influencing people. You don't rely on this one so much, but it's pretty much all I have because my decks are terrible. So what I do is, and this is definitely an advanced topic that we can spend hours talking about, and we have spent hours talking about it at times. Don't become, like, if I have to offer one piece of advice, don't be a jerk. Okay, so two pieces of advice. Don't become the threat until you're ready to be the threat, right? Until you can, with confidence, look at your board state, look at what's in your hand and say, yeah, bring it, because I got it. You shouldn't try to become the threat. You shouldn't just go like, oh my God, I can make 5 tokens. I'm going to do it right now. Because then what you've done is you've drawn attention to yourself and now you're never going to win because everybody's going to expect you to whip out that 5 token card again or something even worse than that. And you'll never have an opportunity to, you know, explode again and just take them. But if you can avoid doing that and instead use your big guns when no one expects it, because no one has seen you deploy it. Sort of like when Nate was, playing possum by having all of those big cards in his hand, because we know he was playing possum. It was totally deliberate. Then Nate, you know, he was able to win games because nobody expected him to be a threat. But if you come out in the first 3 turns, especially if you do a turn 1 soul ring, you're in a lot of trouble.
Soul ring and a signet.
Oh my goodness, yeah. That, I mean, first of all, that's really cool. Good job. But but you did just become the number one threat at the table because now all of a sudden you're starting turn 2 with, what is that? That's 4 mana available. That's amazing. That's absolutely amazing. Don't do that. Because you rightfully will become the biggest threat at the table and then people will suppress you. And if you have a new deck, unless you're a whiz deck builder, you know, you're just going to be suppressed. They're going to tear you apart. Don't let them do that. Don't give them a reason.
We are talking about 4-player games, not 2-player dual commander.
Oh, yeah, no, right. Yeah.
Because if you become strong, then there's 3 other people who are going to look at you.
And look at you they do. Like a piece of bacon. So this is related to this next tip that Nate's going to talk about.
Tip 11, threat assessment. If you cannot reliably identify the biggest threat at the table at any given time, then you might weaken the wrong opponent by doing something.
It's glorious.
And if you do that, then that opponent could have helped you against the actual biggest threat. And then you're throwing the game further towards the currently winning player. And then you have 2 other players at the table who are looking at you like, what the heck did you do, you crazy person? And then they're going to resent you and generate long-term salt.
Mm-hmm.
And they'll punish you for it in future games. So if you're just starting out and you don't know what the biggest threat is, talk it through with the rest of the table. Because only one person's going to disagree with you, and that's the biggest threat. Hey, I'm not the biggest threat. Yes, you are. Yes, you are. Oh, okay. I'll attack that guy then.
Yeah, and that's why it's very important not to come out and seem like you're the biggest threat. Because then the true biggest threat, which is usually Nate, will be able to point at you and say, well, you see all those tokens he just generated. The wrong threat assessment will get you killed, will get you hated.
Mm-hmm. So, yeah, talk to everybody and say, hey, I think that's not a good board state over there. I think we got to take care of that person, right? Right, you guys? You all agree?
Yeah.
Guys and gals?
I've seen people take actual votes. Like, let's vote.
All right.
Let's vote who I should attack with this whatever creature.
Will of the Council.
Yep. And even though we're not really talking about politics, you can totally use your new player status to be like, hey, I don't know who I should attack. You know, I'm new to this game.
Who wants to give me stuff?
Part of being a new player, right? So tip 12, smell the roses. Take your time as a new player. A lot of new players will feel pressured to like learn fast. And I've even been in a meta where I watched an really experienced player just gesture rudely with like roll his hand, like, come on, you're taking too long. And he was playing against another player who had only played Commander twice and was using a Derevi pre-constructed deck, right? The one with all the tap this when it enters the battlefield stuff. Just take your time. Have fun. You know, learn the game and the cards at a pace that's good for you. And don't worry about what somebody else at the table wants. That's why, keeping this in mind, when the guy was tutoring last night, I was not rushing him. I wasn't telling him, like, oh, God, you got to move faster. I was just like, okay. I went, I got a drink. I came back. He was still tutoring. I went to the bathroom. I came back. He finished tutoring, right? So you just let that happen. Yeah, as an experienced player, you have to remember when you were first learning it and the intimidating wall of text that is on so many of these Magic cards.
Oh, and if you are playing in a game with somebody who's rolling their eyes and doing hand gestures while you're taking your time, don't play with that person anymore and start your own podcast. So, tip 13. This is Sean's tip. Like Frank Sinatra, do it your way. I'm aware that it is an ironic tip on a tip show, but play the way you want to. Many people tell you how to play and not what to do. Don't play that card. It's terrible. You never want to run those cards with that commander. I don't like that strategy. Don't play it. Ignore them. Ignore them all. Set your own definition of fun and acceptable play.
Mm-hmm.
Don't listen. Tip 14. Readjust your idea of what success is. If you are familiar with other types of gaming, a good win percentage is normally 50%. In Commander, you should readjust your expectations. A 1 in 4 win percentage is a very good rate for a deck, not even a player. If an individual deck is beating this ratio considerably, it's probably over the line and hit that touchdown. Not sure what that means. Tip 15. Grey Goose is not the best vodka. Okay. Just because a card is expensive does not mean it is necessarily good. Think of these questions.
Sean doesn't even drink.
Yeah, how would he know?
Yeah, right?
Why is... You know, hang on. I saw this experiment where they took this, you know, crappy plastic jug vodka,
yeah,
and they just ran it through a filter like 4 or 5 or 6 times, and it tasted great then.
So just run your vodka through a filter.
Mm-hmm. Just because a card is expensive does not mean it is necessarily good. Think of these questions. Why is the card expensive? Is it because of low print runs or different formats driving the price? Is the card about to be reprinted or drop out of standard? Mm-hmm. Is there a cheaper alternative? Would $50 be better spent elsewhere? The answer is usually yes. Perhaps a new deck. You could buy a new deck with $50.
Yeah, how crazy is that, right?
You could probably buy 2 of the right precons for $50.
If you know where to shop and know when to buy them, certainly. And if not, you can always listen to the Commander's Brew, and they do 2 $50 decks every week. And you could buy one of those decks, an entirely new deck for $50.
Mm.
Crazy. I'm not thinking about all the $50 cards I've bought.
Too late. So now we have some comments from new players when we ask them the question, what would they like to have known?
Mm-hmm.
So Renee Paris Jr. from Phil's League at Geeky Tees. Was that right?
Geeky Tees and Games in Burbank, yeah.
Yeah. I wish I'd known about card synergy and consistency in decks.
Oh, yeah.
Starting off, it was easy to see which cards were good, but it wasn't as easy spotting how some bad cards were actually amazing when paired with something else. When I first tried making my own deck, I thought, damn, might as well throw all these cards in, I'm sure to win. And then you don't have enough lands. But then finding out that one card with a specific effect is sometimes not the smartest thing to do, especially when it's your win condition.
Yeah, and by the way, you sounded exactly like Renee just then. So in your first deck, and this really only applies to your first deck, right? I don't think synergy is even that important. So if you're one of those people who's kind of worried about putting together a commander deck and you're thinking like, oh God, I have to make sure all the cards work together. No, stop, stop. If you're playing in a pair of colors, the cards are probably going to work well together in the first place because they usually do. And you don't know really what your theme is and what you want out of your first deck. So just put a couple of colors together, get your best cards, see what works, and then with your second iteration on that deck, when you're tuning it, when you're discouraged because you just got your face kicked in by Gonti, let's say, then you tune it, you try to make it work better, and that's when you worry about the synergy. But the first time especially, I wouldn't worry it so much. I know that contradicts what Renee was saying.
Yeah, stop contradicting.
Oh, sorry.
The second biggest thing he'd wish he'd known is all the different resources for learning about types of decks, cards, themes, and so on. I relied heavily on my friends and what they were playing before I realized I had tons of other resources available, like local card shops, websites, YouTube channels, podcasts like this one, and EDH Rec. How about that?
I don't know if we recommend EDHREC.com enough.
I've heard of it.
Yeah.
We might have mentioned it.
Might have mentioned it, even once or twice this episode, right?
Mm-hmm. Patron, Admiral Jason Hill. The big things I wish I had known were politics, the temporary alliances that are a great strat that most players seem to use. Commander damage can be a great strat. There's no way to roll it back. As a result, life gain decks in Commander are not as good as I thought they would be. Take that, Aloro.
Well, Sean has a couple of decks, Uncle Karlov and Ailey, that really use life gain as a form of currency. Have you ever played with anything like that?
I'm thinking Vishkal.
Oh, Vishkal, yeah.
But yeah, basically black and white Orzhov is that kind of deck.
Yeah. My friend Eldridge had an Aloro deck that he was starting, but kind of backed away from Magic because he realized what a sink it could be. Because he was like, oh, I'm spending too much time researching. But his Aloro deck was starting to get pretty sharp, and he was beginning to really get a handle on using that life gain as a way to draw cards and do all sorts of things.
An Aetherflex Reservoir.
Oh, yeah.
So also, you don't have to send your commander to the command zone.
Nope.
Sometimes you can take advantage of them, killing your commander, and you put it in the graveyard.
Yeah, like Child of Alara, a lot of people make this mistake, including some veteran EDH players. Child of Alara has to go to the graveyard because she only works when she dies.
Well, the ability, yeah.
The ability only works when it dies, yeah. And then, of course, you have some experience with this, don't you? Gonti.
Oh, yeah. Gonti, it's sometimes easier to reanimate Gonti from your graveyard, since you're in mono black, and it's cheaper to do that than to cast them from your command zone.
Mm-hmm. I experienced the luxury firsthand, by the way. The Gonti deck that eventually won the night last night, Gonti was in the graveyard, and I cast Mimeoplasm as Gonti with 6+1+1 counters on it, thanks to a Bosch Iron Golem that was in the other guy's graveyard. But, oh, the luxury, Nate. Oh.
You're lording it over everybody. Mm-hmm. Patron, Jackie Miller.
Mm-hmm.
Says, don't blindly put cards in your deck because it's listed on Tapped Out or EDH Rec. Make sure you understand what your deck is trying to do, what the card does, and that it helps you reach that goal.
Very good advice.
Patron Andy Bentley. My best advice? Play. Try new decks. Find your play style. I love aggro. I found that out by playing. Next, learn how to play multiple types of decks. I love aggro, but you need to know how to deal with control and tempo and combo. The best way to understand how to deal with them is to learn how to play them. Next, don't be afraid to ask for help with deck building, brewing, or asking about the rules to get a better grasp of the game and mechanics. James Vanden Bogart says, in Commander, I'm usually trying to think about synergy. How do these cards interact with one another, and in what order are they most effective? It gets really overwhelming for me when I'm trying to build a deck. I started with Kaladesh, so I've seen, 500 cards? I have no idea what possibilities are even out there, so I'm constantly thinking there is something better I don't know about. It was taking me 10 minutes a turn, just because I had to read every card. While playing, I was more focused on winning, not learning. I actually like this game, so only trying to win will just exhaust me and leave me with an equal amount of knowledge that I had before. I did not know that it was a social game either, so getting into this setting forces you to change your mentality. It's more like Settlers of Catan, in that you have to barter and coax people into doing things that benefit you, or hurt them, ultimately.
Yeah.
It's a constant puzzle that will always keep evolving as your understanding of the cards develops over time.
Yeah. His Gunty deck has gone from sort of like just figuring out what to do to this focused razor blade. Oh, he's got Panharmonicon in it now, and that's terrible.
Mm-hmm.
So he's picked it up fast. He's been playing quite a bit.
Excellent.
Hopefully some new players have picked something up from this, Nate. It is almost the end of the show, so you have a message of hope and light and goodness and for our new players among our listeners, don't you?
I got a message. Suppose you're not a nice person.
Ugh.
And suppose you're going to introduce three other new players to Commander. Marilyn of the Mournsong.
Oh, you...
One black black. It's a legendary creature. Elf wizard. 2/3. Players can't draw cards. At the beginning of each player's draw step, that player loses 3 life. Searches his or her library for a card, puts it into his or her hand, then shuffles his or her library. So, if there is a table of noobs, a Marilyn deck will probably hose all of them and spread pointless misery. Everyone will be waiting for at least a solid minute at the start of every player's turn during the searches. They won't know what to search for. They won't get to increase the familiarity with their own deck interactions by seeing how the unexpected card combinations work. They have to read every card to figure out what it does. And then that's going to happen the next turn and the next turn. It's going to happen every turn. And then after this has continued long enough and you are done playing with your food, you tutor and play Obnixilis Unshackled, and everyone cries at the big waste of time they just had.
Nate. Oh, God, that is so evil. Especially if it's a player who's new to Magic, and you've just gone through every player gets to draw a card every turn. And then you play Marilyn, and Marilyn's like, nope. Suffer.
Nope. You have to find something.
Go find
Go
something.
Go look. There's only 90 some cards left. Go ahead. Read them all.
Take your time. Don't worry. I'll be here next turn. Wow, Nate, that's that probably is the rudest card that you possibly could play for in a group of new players.
Yep. Mm. And it's a legendary creature, so it can be your commander, and you can have it out on turn 3.
Have you played it yet?
Nope.
No, you stick to Nath of the Guild Thief.
Mm. Hmm. And then nobody has cards.
Yeah.
Except me.
You. Lovely. I'm in shock. Now I guess after all that, we should announce the winner.
Contest winner!
Winner, and here it is, of a signed, sealed Commander 2016 Stalwart Unity deck, signed by Ethan Fleischer. Let me put this up on my tripod here. Signed by Ethan Fleischer, the lead designer, and Ben Hayes, the lead developer of the set. Now we are going to use advanced computer processes to select the winner. You can hear our computer going right now. Oof. Is it printing yet, Nate?
It's a dot matrix.
Yeah. And I'd like to remind everybody that we will be announcing more of these in the coming weeks. In fact, we have four more of these. And then, of course, we have the entire package, which I think is going to get saved for a live audience at GP Vegas. But
oh, my goodness.
Yeah, more on that later. So, who is our winner, and from where have we drawn this name among our many social media contacts and followers?
The winner is... YouTuber... Andrew Matthews.
Well, congratulations, Andrew.
So, Andrew, get in touch with us, and you'll get a deck.
Yep. Best way to get in touch with us for this is to write to us at cast@commanderandmtg.com, and we'll say the email plenty of times in the next few minutes. Make sure that you let us know what your YouTube account is, because we have that information, and we'll check it just to make sure it's you. But please write to us right away, and we'll get this out. And yeah, I want to remind everybody that we don't care where you live. We're shipping this everywhere across our fine planet.
It's crazy.
Yeah, it is crazy.
So, thanks for hanging out with us, everybody. Without your support, this episode would not have happened. If you want to support the podcast, head over to patreon.com/commanderinmtg.
Yep.
Or you can give us a 5-star review on iTunes. That might help, too. We love talking to our listeners, and we are incredibly grateful to all the patrons like Dwiananto Ariotomo, Shane Moriarty, Dan Kraus.
Thanks, guys. Very generous of each of you, and Dan, I guess we'll be getting in touch to have you join our patron group on Facebook.
Yes, because if you donate $10 or more per episode, you can come join our patron chat we host on Facebook.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. You can reach us by going to our website, commanderinmtg.com. Our email is cast@commanderinmtg.com.
Andrew, make sure that you pay attention to that and send us email so you can claim your prize.
Get your deck. And if you go to a search bar, you can type in Commander in MTG Podcast and you'll find us.
Yeah, you
individually
will.
On Twitter, I'm at Mr. Plorg.
And I am at Ketjack.
And Sean is at Copain26.
Mm-hmm. Don't forget that Sean is running a GoFundMe to join us in Vegas, where we will be up to many, many shenanigans, including maybe some live streaming. Who knows what we're going to be doing? But we're going to be playing...
Not just one shenanigan.
Not one, but many. Myriad shenanigans, in fact.
Mm-hmm.
So help him get there. Go to GoFundMe. Search for Sean Watson Commander. And of course, we'll provide a link in the show notes.
And that's our show.
So it turns out I've discovered that if I need to figure out where, like if I have a file, but I need to figure out where I've put that file, what I do is I create a dummy file. And then I just try to save it. And then wherever I try to save it is usually where I put the previous version of that file that I was searching for. Because of the way I rebuild that pathway. And it's ridiculous. It's ridiculous.
Hmm.
But that's how I found these other... Basically, I found these other things because I was typing the same titles.
Do it again.
Yep.